From Waynesburg Two State College, Erie to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Congress is considering legislation that would significantly increase the number of Internal Revenue Service agents and give the IRS the power to look at banking transactions of $600 or more. Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers joins David Taylor and Rebecca Euler for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And the American left is using a combination of Orwellian newspeak and Jedi mind tricks to make their spending plans look like something they are not. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Attorney General Josh Shapiro has become the first person to formally announce his candidacy for the Democratic nomination to succeed Governor Tom Wolf, who is term-limited and cannot seek re-election. Shapiro has been a high-profile attorney general, spearheading a number of left-wing causes. As a result, he has so far cleared the field of potential rivals and appears to have a clear path in his party's primary. That stands in contrast to the Republican primary, where no fewer than 15 candidates have announced or are considering candidacies. Republicans are expressing outrage and concern over a video that shows an unidentified man allegedly stuffing multiple ballots into a drop box in Scranton during the May primary election. Republicans have been sharply critical of new no-excuse mail-in voting laws and unsecured ballot drop boxes, seeking reform through the legislative process, only to have their efforts at improving election security vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf. According to the Center Square, Senate President Pro Tem Jake Corman says the incident only fuels the already substantial mistrust in our election system. The skyrocketing cost of a college education, coupled with disruptions dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, have resulted in the biggest drop in enrollment in the Pennsylvania state system of higher education in more than a decade. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, across the system's 14 schools, enrollment dropped by about 5,000 students, or 5%, from last year. This comes as PASHE struggles with financial problems and is in the process of merging six of the schools into three. According to the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue, September tax collections came in at 14% above projections, pushing the surplus in tax collections for the fiscal year, which began July 1st, to $628.3 million. The state is also benefiting from an inflow of hundreds of millions of federal dollars from various so-called stimulus bills designed to help offset revenue losses and added expenses from the COVID-19 pandemic. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Massive spending bills are currently bogged down in Congress, but the proposed legislation contains some potentially invasive provisions, including giving the IRS the ability to monitor all banking transactions of $600 or more. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. He is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Good to be here again, David. Thank you.
Well, and we need to upgrade security or something that we let this guy in, our old pal, Kevin Shivers, now the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Kevin, great to see you again.
It is so good to see you as well. I heard they had free food back here, and so I just decided to follow the path back to the studio.
So we're getting the band back together here. For longtime listeners, remembering Kevin, a longtime part of the show, but you come to us in your new capacity. And before we get to the issue of the day, let's just explain to the folks who are listening, what is the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers?
That's exactly right, David. Most of your listeners remember me when I wore the small business cap of the National Federation of Independent Business, and I traded my small business hat for one of small banks. In Pennsylvania, there are 140 community banks throughout Pennsylvania. Those banks, you know, the difference between a community bank and another types of bank is that local deposits are held locally and are then used to invest in small businesses in those local communities or in mortgages or in other types of charitable work in communities across Pennsylvania. When you think of the community banks, overall in Pennsylvania, there were some $10 billion that were originated in Paycheck Protection Loans last year during the throes of the pandemic and then earlier this year. My membership, we did about $3 billion worth of those loans. That's an extraordinary number for a small group of community banks in an association like ours. So nationally, you're looking at community banks having originated about two-thirds of all of the Paycheck Protection Loans in America, truly an extraordinary number.
All right. So, Kevin, you come to us bearing a grave concern that you wanted to share with us and via us to the listeners.
Yeah, we've been following this debate in Washington over a $3.5 trillion spending plan and a process by which members of Congress use to justify spending and revenues. We call that reconciliation.
Yeah, yeah. And before we get any further down this road, million, billion, trillion, the words sound similar, but a billion is 1,000 million. A trillion is 1,000 billion, or 1 million times $1 million. And to benchmark this, you know, the price tag, just the sticker on the cover of this thing is $3,500,000,000. It would be much more, actually, because it would create ongoing entitlement programs and whatnot. There's also a $1,000,000,000 infrastructure package. These two pieces of legislation, these two spending bills together, total more than the entire cost of the federal government 2 years ago. So just to understand the enormity, the vastness of what is being discussed here, These are crazy big numbers.
And, you know, listening to you explain those numbers, I'm just thinking that there are cars careening off roads all across Pennsylvania because their heads are exploding trying to put that in perspective. It truly is extraordinary to think that in the last 10 years, you know, we've gone from having conversations about billions of dollars to now, you know, talking about trillions of dollars in a federal spending plan. And there's a consequence to that because that has to be paid for. And, you know, one of the ways that Congress finds money to be able to justify that spending is to come up with tax gimmicks and other ways of raising revenue. We're hearing a lot about taxing the rich, right? And we'll just take this money from the rich. And one of the recent proposals.
Find a mirror, folks, and look in. That's the rich person to be taxed.
Right. One of the proposals to tax billionaires is this new proposal that would require banks, not only in Pennsylvania but across the country, to report personal bank information and bank account information of their depositors and their bank customers to the IRS. For inflows and outflows of those bank accounts totaling $600 or more.
And I want to emphasize this. We are not talking about transactions of $600 or more. We are talking about all transactions in and out of all accounts that have $600 or more in them.
That's exactly right. So if you think about it, if you know, someone who may receive some type of public assistance or retirement payment into their bank account, if that totals $600 or more, then the bank under this proposal would be obligated to take that personal information and then report that to the Internal Revenue Service. To do what with? David, we just don't know. The point behind this is to find the billionaires who are underreporting their taxes. And you know, the first question then becomes, well, then why are we starting at $600? You know, if we're looking for billionaires who are sheltering income, perhaps, you know, start at a higher number, or perhaps take a look at offshore accounts. But the you know, this, we're afraid, is going to be an extraordinary invasion of privacy. You know, you could look at it as the government's way of surveilling the American population, because if you have an account at a credit union, a bank, any type of financial institution, you send money to your children through Venmo or to a, you know, using your PayPal account, of that information, once that threshold hits $600, that personal information, that account information, then is transmitted to the Internal Revenue Service for them to evaluate against, you know, what other information they have.
Yes, it was state surveillance. And, of course, the leftists love to talk about a right to privacy until you actually need privacy. This would also endanger, of course, free speech with people supporting causes and not-for-profit organizations who, again, under the U.S. Supreme Court case it was Alabama versus the Klan, that the NAACP versus the Klan, that private giving to organizations is confidential so that donors can't be harassed, intimidated. That if you had this kind of surveillance state by the IRS tracking every single transaction in every single bank account in America, then all of those free speech protections under the law would be nullified.
My head is spinning thinking about my teenage son, who we're trying to, you know, help him understand how to manage his finances. He has his own bank account. So with his summer job, you know, the IRS is going to be tracking his deposits that he makes a couple of $1,000s a summer, you know, and that really scares me. I mean, we just filled out the federal application for financial assistance, and knowing that, you know, all of this information is going to be readily available to anyone who wants to look at it in the federal government is just kind of frightening to me, you know. And obviously he's not doing anything wrong. He's not laundering money. He's not doing anything like that. But it's just frightening to me that the federal government would have access to that information.
And that's an important point you made, Rebecca, is you know, there is the expectation that surveillance is the result of some type of fraudulent activity or criminal activity. And you know,
something you need a warrant for.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, originally there are requirements currently on financial institutions that they report suspicious transactions. And you know, many of these were bolstered following 9/11, because we wanted to track the money the bad guys were putting into the system or using our federal monetary system to be able to transact and fund terror or sex trafficking or launder money. And so there are requirements on banks currently that say if there are transactions above $10,000, then you need to report that information to the federal government. Now, banks will tell you there's a real frustration there because there are a lot of transactions of $10,000 or more in a single instance. And none of that information, or very few, minuscule numbers of those, are ever used. And we've talked to you know, former federal prosecutors who will acknowledge it's an awful lot of effort. You know, when you're requiring a financial institution to report every transaction of $10,000 or more to us as a suspicious transaction, that's a lot of effort. But boy, when we find somebody who's doing something really bad it makes it really easy because then we can go through this, you know, this pile of paper and we can find all of that evidence that we need that those transactions occurred and we can really nail the bad guy. But now we're talking about a proposal here in reconciliation that this Congress is debating, where we're going to take that now and expand that authority of the federal government to law-abiding citizens.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and with us, our special guest, Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. So I cannot believe that the federal government has the authority in existing law or statutory authority to conduct this kind of surveillance on individual Americans without a warrant. How is this? How are the advocates for this change justifying this new power?
Sure. Well, you know, there are some within government who believe that power already exists, and so that this is just a way to codify that power and to allow them to use it more broadly than they're able to do. There's a real question on whether or not they have that authority. The point of this is to pay for the $3.5 trillion in spending, because what the U.S. Treasury is estimating as a revenue from this type of surveillance is $456 billion. That's a lot of money. They're estimating that this type of revenue will generate $456 billion
per year,
or during the period of reconciliation. What is that? A 10-year period, which is it's an extraordinary number, and that is. As long as we are talking about a $3.5 trillion spending plan, this proposal will be a part of it, because there are only so many legs upon which you can offset a $3.5 trillion spending plan.
And for clarity, I want to repeat very slowly what we're discussing here, which is a proposal for the federal government to monitor all transactions in all accounts totaling $600 or more, which is not to say a transaction of $600, but rather in all accounts everywhere that have $600 or more. I assume if at any point during the year it has $600 in it, then that the IRS would surveil all transactions.
Yeah, that information would be required to be reported by that financial institution to the IRS. The last number I read, they're proposing to hire 100,000 new revenue agents at the Internal Revenue Service as part of this. But the second piece to that is an acknowledgement by the Internal Revenue Service that their current cyber security preparedness is poor. The IRS itself reported in testimony before the U.S. Senate that they annually field 1.4 billion hacking attempts on the Internal Revenue Service. So it you know, think about it. Now you're taking this agency and you're giving 300 plus million Americans personal financial bank account information. That number is only going to get bigger. And the thing is, the bad guys only need to be wrong, you know, right once. They only need to get that information one time. And you can just imagine the type of financial devastation and destruction that could cause.
Yeah, and the record of the federal government is not good on this. That the Federal Office of Personnel Management was hacked, and that all of the files on every single person who was a federal employee or applied for federal employment, all of that information was stolen. And these were not just, you know, name and address and phone number. Like, these files individually were hundreds of data points deep with all kinds of confidential information for background checks even, and that Uncle Sam couldn't keep that safe.
And that also is overlooking the recent history with the Internal Revenue Service politicizing their activities, right? I mean, there have been cases in recent years where the IRS was accused of using their powers for to go after political groups or ideological groups.
Well, yeah, so, and just recently, just in recent months, that the tax releases, the tax forms of certain prominent wealthy Americans was leaked. By somebody inside the IRS who got a hold of these things. And again, all that information is supposed to be confidential. And this just – so anyway, Kevin, we thank you for coming to us to bring this information. And I guess the question from Rebecca and me and all the listeners is, well, what happens next?
Well, this is a process. We're encouraging every Pennsylvanian to reach out to their member of Congress. We are partnering with our federal ally at the Independent Community Bankers of America. They've set up an action alert page. They've generated 700,000 comments to members of Congress to explain how bad this is. As well, we're partnering with other stakeholder groups, business groups and consumer groups to point out to members of Congress, Senator Casey as an example, that, you know, this type of surveillance of our personal information is going to forever change the relationship that consumers have with banks. We've heard from banking customers that if this goes through, they're going to withdraw their money and they're going to put it under their mattress, or maybe they'll try and hide it in some kind of cyber currency. But at the end of the day, that does not do well for a strong, safe and sound monetary system in our country. It provides an awful lot of power to the federal government.
Well, Kevin, this is alarming, and these are things that Rebecca and I have, and you know, in days gone by that we discuss on the show about the people who a lot of people have government where God ought to be. Excuse me for saying so, but there's no way around it. And the idea that the government has first claim on each of us, on our lives, on every dollar that we earn and spend, to me as an American who loves liberty, is truly terrifying. And there's something seriously wrong with our policymakers and the people who are running our government if they think this is okay.
You know, Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Yellen made it a comment like, you know, look, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you should have nothing to fear, by this proposal. It's only intended to go after those people who are not, you know, playing by the rules or paying their fair share. Well, if that's the case, then government shouldn't be looking at my information if I'm doing nothing wrong.
Yeah, they can get a warrant.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this comes down to the last of the time that we have. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us. So nice to have you back. Where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
Fantastic. David, again, thank you very much. Rebecca, you can please visit pacb.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people find you online?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and Kevin and me, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. You might think it would be difficult to tie together the novel 1984, written by George Orwell, the Star Wars film trilogies, and the current ultra-left-wing propaganda being parroted by the legacy news media. It's actually quite easy. You see, all three feature the same tactic, but use different names. Orwell called it newspeak. Star Wars employed Jedi mind tricks. The left today combines the two by irrationally redefining terms, the hallmark of newspeak, then performs rhetorical mind tricks designed to make something appear to be other than what it actually is. To carry through the analogy, Big Brother, in this case President Joe Biden, raised the process to an art form when he claimed the $3.5 trillion in so-called human infrastructure, along with $1.5 trillion in infrastructure spending, would actually cost the nation nothing. Well, there's much to unpack there. Let's begin with the obvious. Spending $5 trillion will not cost nothing. Spending $5 trillion will cost $5 trillion. Biden and Congress can rewrite many laws, but they cannot rewrite the laws of economics. If you spend $5 trillion, then it must be paid for, either through enhanced revenue, higher taxes, or by expanding the money supply, printing money. Either course of action will have a dramatically negative economic effect. Tax more, and you stifle investment and innovation. Print money, and you trigger inflation. Those are the costs, and they are painfully real. Then there is the term human infrastructure. This is a new type of newspeak designed to Jedi mind trick the electorate into thinking a radical left-wing wish list of social spending is somehow an investment in our well-being. It is, in fact, a socialist ploy designed to dramatically increase government control over every aspect of American life. The witch's brew of spending uses the pretext of fighting the perceived negative effects of climate change to give Big Brother more control over everything from education to the economy. Spending is not the only Orwellian assault being undertaken by the radical left wing that has taken control of the Democratic Conference in Congress. An unconstitutional assault on voting rights is another misdirect. Again, employing newspeak, the bill has been dubbed the For the People Act. It is, in fact, a For the Politicians Act. It is a bold effort to nullify individual state constitutions by putting the election process in the hands of federal bureaucrats and to hijack the congressional redistricting process by requiring so-called redistricting commissions to carry out the task rather than state legislatures. All of this is aimed not at election security and integrity, but rather is designed to advantage Democrats by changing the rules. The left has good reason to continue employing these tactics. Think back to passage of Obamacare. Obamacare is officially known as the Affordable Care Act. The purpose of what became a massive federal intervention into health care was supposedly to provide coverage to the uninsured. Instead, it radically changed the system, making health care significantly more expensive or unaffordable, and doing little to expand coverage. As with the Affordable Care Act, the left is attempting major structural change and economic disruption, not by building bipartisan consensus, but rather through the raw exercise of political power. Democrats have the barest of majorities in both chambers of Congress, and as they always do when they can't win by playing by the rules, they are seeking to change the rules by ending the Senate's long-held tradition of filibuster, whereby it takes 60 senators to agree to end debate and pass legislation. And woe be it to anyone who challenges left-wing orthodoxy. Parents across the nation have been fighting so-called equity policies, critical race theory, and other racist teachings in our schools. That has led Attorney General Merrick Garland to resort to newspeak by labeling those who disagree as domestic terrorists. In the process, he is turning the Justice Department into the thought police. George Orwell wrote his seminal novel back in 1949, but in many ways, fiction has become reality. Keep in mind, the ultimate outcome of the novel was a totalitarian society wherein every thought and action was controlled by the government. Time will tell whether the American left will completely transform the United States of America into Orwell's fictional state of Oceania. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, along with WKQL-AM and FM in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.